Start Money rolling along on this Wednesday afternoon. Joe Cirillo here in for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And we're going to hit the progressive guest line here, Dustin, because we've got a lot of baseball on the slate to talk about today. So who better to bring in and talk about it, handicap some games, discuss yesterday's trade deadline than former Blue Jays scout, current MLB handicapper, John Bowman. John, how you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. We appreciate you making the time. And I want to start right there with that former club, of course, of yours, the Toronto Blue Jays, and get your reaction to what they did yesterday. I think a lot of people thought Vladdy would be on the move. He ultimately was not dealt. Bichette also remaining a Blue Jay. What do you think of how Toronto handled that deadline? Obviously, you know, they're out on this season, but moving forward, not closing the door to success. Do you like it, or do you think that they should have begun a full-scale rebuild?
I love it. I think they made the perfect moves. I don't think they should have moved Vladdy. I don't think they should have moved Bo. But I do think they had a lot of pieces to move, especially Yusei Kikuchi, who got a massive return. Joey Loperfido, Jake Bloss, and another player. A couple of the Astros' top prospects there. He actually commanded a little bit more than some of the other starting pitchers on the market. So Ross Atkins did very well, in my opinion. I don't think you want to move on from a guy like Vladdy. He's a generational player. You've got to give him his contract and make him a cornerstone for the future. Bo Bichette, his value right now, he's having a terrible season. His value's at an all-time low. So you don't really want to sell a guy, especially when he's hurt, when his value's at an all-time low. You kind of just want to wait, have him get back next year, especially if you think he can contribute. So I love what the Blue Jays did.
Yeah, that Kikuchi deal was crazy. I couldn't believe how much they got in return. They also dealt Justin Turner to Seattle a couple days ago, John. When you look at the Mariners right now, first place in the AL West, still plus 115 over at DraftKings to win that division. They needed offense. They brought in maybe not the sexiest names at this point in their career, but Justin Turner, a little bit older, but a veteran who's won a World Series. Randy Arozarena, who's popped in the playoffs before. What do you think of the moves the Mariners made to add those two to that lineup?
I really like what the Mariners did. I don't think with their type of team, you can really go overboard and say overpay for example, like a Vladdy, you know, kind of give away your whole farm for a guy like him, because the Mariners needed so much help. You know, you can't necessarily just plug one guy into that lineup and everything will be fixed. They needed a lot of options. So I love what they did with that pitching. They're going to be able to contend until the very end, and their bats are starting to heat up a bit. They'll get Julio Rodriguez and JP Crawford off the IL soon, and that lineup will be a little bit deep. And honestly, they just have to be good enough to keep their pitching in it. So I like what the Mariners did as well.
Yeah, I want to stick in that AL East and look at a rival of the Blue Jays and the Baltimore Orioles and what they did at the deadline. I would say it's an interesting deadline, to say the least, for Baltimore. Now, you can look at the moves that they made and adding Rodgers and Eflin to the rotation. Certainly shored up from where it's been because they've had so many injuries, but they really failed to get that solidified number two behind Corbin Burnes. Now they're going to have to rely on Grayson Rodriguez. They gave up a bat who's been a mainstay in Baltimore and Austin Hayes to try to shore up an inconsistent bullpen. I see a lot of pros, but also a lot of cons to what the Orioles did. What's your take on Baltimore's deadline? I'm personally not as quick to crown them a winner like most.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think they made some good moves and some not so good moves that they didn't make. But added Eflin, added Rodgers to that rotation. I don't love trading Connor Norby for Rodgers. I mean, Rodgers, you have the control, but Norby is one of their top prospects. Kind of would have expected them to be in on like a Tarik Skubal, Garrett Crochet, maybe more so. But we heard that bombshell of a story come out about Crochet not going to pitch in the playoffs, which kind of defeats the purpose of trading for him. So not terribly surprised the Orioles didn't make any moves. My guess is, especially for like a Tarik Skubal, they were being asked about Jackson Holliday, one of their top prospects. And I don't think they wanted to move him, frankly. So they did a lot of retooling instead of kind of making that big move. And if you look at it, they called up Jackson Holliday back to the big league team. And that's kind of a move if you look at it. You know, you don't necessarily trade for him, but you bring him up to the big league team. And hopefully he's kind of what you'd expect now. So the Orioles did a lot of retooling. I think that they're a better team, but definitely a little surprised that they didn't make that big move.
I mean, how surprised are you at the market for starting pitchers this deadline? It just felt like everyone had to gross overpay when Trevor Rogers, who I think is a very serviceable four at his absolute peak a few years ago, a three, but you have to give up not one but two prospects. I was shocked Tanner Scott or someone else wasn't coming back in that deal for Baltimore. I think that's why we didn't see the bigger pitchers on the move. When you have to pay that big of a price for those guys, it feels like an insane ask for these teams. Also on top of that, just going forward, Baltimore's rotation, John. Like, I get it. Eflin's not sexy, but he's serviceable. Rogers, less sexy, a little less serviceable, but still a solid guy there in the back end. Do you think that got enough for them to set them up in the playoffs?
Yeah, and I mean, you said it. The market was absolutely insane. Some of the returns that we were seeing for these players is something that, honestly, I didn't even imagine. I tweeted out the other day, if I were a GM for one of these teams that's contending, I honestly might think about just not doing anything because the market was so insane. But I think that's also why we saw the Orioles kind of retool, add guys like Eflin and Rogers, maybe who they think, they can tweak his arsenal a bit, have him throw certain pitches more and kind of fix him in a way. The other thing about the Orioles is if you have the farm system that they have, you have all those top prospects, you're going to get asked about them every single time somebody wants to trade with you. You know, you can't necessarily have that 9th, 10th, 11th prospect that you offer and keep all of your top guys. Every single team is going to ask about the same guys. So I think it just shows, like I said, how much they value their prospects. And yeah, Eflin and Rogers, great pieces to that rotation. Eflin, you know, was probably a one last year. He could be two, three if he's performing at his best. Trevor Rogers is a good 4-5 guy. He can give them some good innings. So I do think that they did a good job, and I do think they'll be able to compete. But it'll be all about their bats in the playoffs and that bullpen.
Now, John, when you look at the cost of some of these guys yesterday, obviously the focus and attention has been on starting pitching, but even a rental out of the bullpen. Tanner Scott getting the Marlins 4 prospects from San Diego. 2 of those guys, the Padres' top 4 prospects. Kind of absurd, especially when you look at the fact that he has no control and is a rental. Does this move make San Diego a potential World Series contender for you now that their pitching is starting to get healthy on the rotation side of things? Or if not San Diego, who yesterday made a move that you say, okay, I could see them being a legit World Series contender now because of what they did at the deadline?
Yeah, I think the Padres are a great example, to be honest. I mean, they literally sold the farm. You know, that term is kind of thrown around, but they literally did that to get the players that they wanted. And I do think that they're World Series contenders now. I mean, we saw how full that stadium was yesterday on a Tuesday night against the Dodgers. I believe it was the largest crowd that they've ever had at that park. The fans want baseball in San Diego, and they're kind of delivering it. AJ Preller, we know, is known for making lots of deals, wheeling and dealing, trading a lot of guys. It's what he does. So I think that the Padres are all in now. It's kind of what they were going for. It seems like, you know, they want it now. They've been contending for a few years now. They've tasted the National League championship, the NLCS. So I think they're going all in now, and I do think it makes them a World Series contender.
John Bowman with us, former MLB scout, does awesome handicapping at Baseball with Bowman. All the info on his Twitter at JohnBowman11. So let's handicap a couple games here, John. We've got the Pirates at the Astros, 8-10 on the East Coast. Jake Woodford on the bump for the Buccos, plus $1.80 there. Framber Valdez has been awesome. Lay 218 with him, total set at 8. What are you going to do with this contest?
Yeah, so my favorite play there is the Astros minus 1.5. Framber Valdez has been pitching very well lately. You got Jake Woodford on the other side for the Pirates. He's made a couple starts this season, hasn't really gone more than 4 innings, and hasn't pitched too great. So that means the Pirates bullpen's going to get a little extended. The Astros have all of their bullpen, everyone in their bullpen available. They're looking to avoid the home sweep. So I think the Astros get it done at home there. I also don't mind a first 5 minus 0.5 if you want to go that route. It's kind of deciding between the two, but I think the Astros avoid the sweep at home.
Yeah, I like that first 5 call there, John, especially because with the home team, you could be sacrificing those 3 outs in the bottom of the 9th. First 5, everyone gets 15 outs to work with. Let's shift gears, though, and bring it back to a team that we were just discussing, the Padres. They play host to the Dodgers tonight. Dylan Cease, fresh off a no-no against Clayton Kershaw, second start of the year. How does Cease respond to the no-hitter in D.C. last time out? How do the Padres fare tonight?
Yeah, so I like the Padres on the money line here. My big worry is definitely Dylan Cease coming off the no-hitter. I mean, we've seen a lot of these pitchers come off no-hitters and kind of ride that high and have a little bit of a dud, but he's been pitching so well lately. And we saw the Padres go down 5-0 in the first inning yesterday, and they still came back and won. They're going up against Clayton Kershaw, and if there's a team that's seen Kershaw, it's the Padres. And Kershaw's not going to get terribly deep in the game. He's probably going to pitch 5 innings, which means the Dodgers' bullpen's going to get a little extended. Once again, the Padres have seen those bats, and the Padres seem to be, you know, feeling the momentum from that trade deadline. So I like the Padres on the money line there.
John, incredible stuff. Thank you so much, man. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Great stuff. Great stuff.
Give him a follow on Twitter at JohnBowman11. Great handicapping right there. When we come back, from the diamond to the gridiron, time for the three-point stance. Don't go anywhere. You're locked into Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour two of Sharp Money as we move along on this Wednesday afternoon. Joe Cirillo here in for Patrick Maher alongside Dustin Sweetelson. And, you know, we talked about that great guest lineup at the top of the show, Dustin. We're going to get back to the progressive guest line here and welcome in our guy, Cole Thompson, host of SEC Unfiltered, also the Texans Wire managing editor. And Cole, how you doing? Thanks for coming on. I want to start right there with your Houston Texans, man, because this is a team that I think is getting a lot of disrespect this offseason. And, you know, I'm not of the camp that, oh, now that there's film on CJ, D coordinators are going to figure him out. I am high on Houston going into next year. I think they repeat as division champs. I think they clear that win total with relative ease. What's your take on the Texans? Are they set up to keep on chugging along, or do you actually think they will take a step back in year two with D'Amico and CJ?
There's a middle ground, I think, between the two, because the starting point is, yes, they still have a better roster than most is advertised. I mean, you add in Azeez Al-Shaair, a Pro Bowl defensive end, and Danielle Hunter. You get a superstar cornerback that has already flourished in Kamari Laster out of Georgia. You bring in Stephon Diggs. You bring in an ideal replacement for their running game with Joe Mixon, who, when healthy, can be a 1,000-yard bell cow back. But there also were some limitations that some people seem to forget about last year that boasted well in the Texans' favor. Let's start out with the fact that they had a fourth-place schedule, and they also got to play against an underwhelming NFC South as the out-of-conference matchup, where they finished 12 games below 500 as an entire unit. On top of that, now you get a first-place schedule. You also do have the ability to have more film on C.J. Stroud. You still have question marks when it comes to the offensive line. You still have question marks when it comes to the defensive interior part. You also do have questions when it comes to the future of D'Amico Autry now that he's suspended for 6 games. How do you replace that production? So overall, when I look at the squad, yeah, they're still a good team. And yes, sometimes records will say, oh, well, they're going to finish with this and they should finish with this. That's not really the case with Houston. In my opinion, if they get to 10-7, that's just as good as some teams going 12-5 with their schedule. I mean, you play 3 games in 11 days between Tua Tagovailoa, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes, one of which is on the road and one of which is 4 days after with a shortened week where you got to play on Netflix. So let's not kid ourselves for a second. The Texans are a good team. I don't think that they will regress in terms of being like a 9-8 roster. I have them going 11-6, but I don't know if they've done enough to cross the threshold of being in that conversation alongside the Patrick Mahomeses and Kansas City's or even the Baltimore's and Lamar Jackson's.
Yeah, Cole, see, that's where I'm on the opposite side. I think they're a little bit too trendy, and I think in the NFL, you got to get beat up a little bit before you find your way. And I think we see a lot of teams go through that. I think we're forgetting how things shook out in the AFC South a year ago. A couple things go different way. The Colts are winning that division potentially. Like, there was a lot that went right for Houston. And I'm not saying they're going to be bad. I just think 16-1 to win the Super Bowl. Everyone is on them this year. But you're the one that's going to practice. You're seeing how this team's talking. When you get the vibe from D'Amico Ryans, do you feel he's turning things up a notch? Because now they are the hunted versus the hunter?
No, Dustin, I don't feel like they're turning things up a notch, because they were turning things up a notch last year coming off of finishing with three total wins. Like, when he signed on, he was not joining a roster that was going to be known for having underwhelming success. Now, it was all about building off of what we had as a foundation. And then you go ahead and you land a defensive player of the caliber of Will Anderson Jr. And then you find yourself a wide receiver that can be promising like a Tank Dell. And you find yourself a franchise quarterback in C.J. Stroud. And you get some quality play from Jimmy Ward. And you get some quality play from Jonathan Grenard, and you get some quality play from Blake Cashman. And then when they cash in on their major deals, you find the replacements that immediately are saying, hey, this is the standard that we have set in Houston. Either strap on in or get the hell out. And that's kind of where you are with this roster. But with that being said, I also kind of agree with you. Indianapolis is flying under the radar. Anthony Richardson was able to cook and slice and dice up Houston's front seven in those first two drives against the against the Texans in week two. If he stays healthy, I mean, there's a very good shot that we're talking about another quarterback entering that upper echelon of talented players in the AFC.
Wow. Yeah, I agree with you, man. I think Indianapolis is a scary team to look at as long as Richardson can stay healthy. They finally have a receiving core for what feels like the first time in years now out in Indy. I'm very low on Jacksonville, though. I'm not buying into the Jaguars, which is why I still think it is Houston's division, because I think it's between them and the Colts. But Cole, I want to shift gears a bit and work into the SEC. Of course, you're the host of SEC Unfiltered, and I want to get your feel on the new conference, of course, with the additions of Texas and Oklahoma, and maybe a team that you think, with Georgia and Texas atop everyone's predictions for the SEC, who's a team that you think could surprise a lot of people this year coming out of that conference?
Let's go with the easy surprise and then actually the bold surprise. The easy one, in my opinion, is Missouri. When you look at what they added in via the portal this offseason, guys like Nate Noel and Marcus Carroll, they're not known as SEC running backs, but they're proven productive running backs. One averaged 6.2 yards per play at Appalachian State. The other one was a top five running back in college football last year during his tenure at Georgia State. They still have Mookie Cooper. They still have a very talented wide receiver core headlined by Theo Weiss and by Luther Burden, who for my money is arguably the best wide receiver in college football. They add in some dudes in the transfer portal for the offensive line, too. Caden Green comes on over from Oklahoma. He's a multi-chess piece. Marcus Bryant was a part of an SMU offensive line that last year won the AAC. And their schedule, there's no nothing short of being an easy schedule in conference play. This is about as easy as it's going to get. You have games against Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College, and UMass out of conference. You get to play South Carolina on the road. Your toughest home game is against Oklahoma, at Alabama, at Texas A&M. I think the squad's going to be a 10-2 roster at worst. They're going to find their way into the college football playoff. And let's go for a sleeper team. I like Kentucky. I really do think that there's something about Lexington every 3 years that just finds magic. You look at what the Wildcats did back in 2018. Terry Wilson balls out. They get to 10 wins. Then you go 2 years later, 3 years later, you find Will Levis. You bring in the new offense coordinator in Liam Cohen. Look at that. You're 10-3 once again. So it's year three in the process. You go out and you add in Brock Vandergriff, and Dustin knows this very well. I am a giant MCU fan. I am a believer that we live in the multiverse. There is a multiverse scenario where Carson Beck is transferring to Kentucky because Brock Vandergriff 100% won the starting job. He beat out even Stetson Bennett and was the greatest quarterback to ever walk through Athens history. So if I'm getting that with Bush Hanman, if I get that defensive line that I know is really potent, really deadly, really lethal when it comes to the ability to make plays on third and short, you got a schedule that can bode well in Kentucky's favor. I feel like that being 10-2 may not be enough to guarantee them a spot in the playoff, but I am damn sure not sleeping on the Wildcats. Every 3 years, Mark Stoops got something up his sleeves to where the magic is rolling in Lexington.
Yeah, 9 starters back on defense for the Cats. They bring in a transfer from North Texas, Jamori Macklin, who had 1,000 yards and 57 receptions last year. And like for our purposes, betting-wise, day in and day out, week in, week out, betting on the Cats when they're dogs always pays out well. Missouri, I agree, underdog team. Brady Cook for Heisman is going to be in pocket for me. The other hype team is Ole Miss. I love Ole Miss. Both Joe and I like Jackson Dart as a Heisman bet at about 15-1, plus 650 to win the SEC. The question is, do you believe in Lane Kiffin's maturity to bring this all together and capitalize on the moment?
Dustin, see, this is why I come on your show. I don't do it because of we're friends. I don't do it because of I enjoy our conversations off air talking about Mr. Boom or whatever the kid's name is.
AJ.
I do it because you and I think the exact same. Jackson Dart is my pick to win the Heisman Trophy. I have already placed money down starting last year. I believe that he was coming in this year as the number one quarterback in the SEC. I love what they brought back in terms of the offensive personnel. You get Juice Wells from South Carolina. You have Caden Priestcorn fully healthy. You have a cakewalk preseason of a schedule to where you get dismantle teams to begin the season. Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, Georgia, Southern Kentucky at South Carolina. Your schedule also bodes extremely well on the back end to where you will be on the national stage. They went out and they added in as much talent as possible for the defensive front. Getting Princeton Uwemanle-Yellen from Florida, getting Walter Nolan, the former defensive number one overall recruit of 2022 from Texas A&M. They bolstered up their secondary. Isaiah Hamilton, if you haven't watched film on him at the University of Houston, go ahead and reward yourself this evening by going and enjoying that tape. Key Lawrence is another name that comes on in at from Oklahoma. They have dudes that are going to be an immediate plug-and-play addition. I like Ole Miss to be in Atlanta this year. I like Ole Miss to be a college football playoff contender. I like Ole Miss to be a team that we're talking about going deep, deep, deep into the postseason.
Cool. I couldn't love it anymore. We're all so high on the Rebels, so high on Jackson Dart. And I've been saying, you mentioned that cupcake schedule to start the season, right? That's the stat padding time for Jackson Dart, right? Last year, he was a 40 touchdown guy. Everyone goes 32 in the air, but he also had 8 on the ground. Pad your stats early on. And then to win the Heisman Trophy, you need a Heisman moment. He's got two opportunities for them at LSU, home against Georgia. I think if he pulls one of those games out, there is your Heisman moment for then what would likely be an 11-1 team going to the SEC championship game. Hey, in about 30 seconds here, what does Ole Miss need to do to knock off the Bulldogs that November 9th game at home?
Consistency, consistency, consistency on the ground. They added in another running back in Henry Parrish Jr. that has experience playing with Ole Miss. He was recruited by Kevin Smith, goes to Miami, comes back to the Rebels for his final season. You have Ulysses Bentley. Sometimes it's about the quantity of play, not the quality of play. You lose Quinshon Judkins overnight, but you get a plethora of running backs in that backfield. Milk that clock down. Put as much pressure on Carson Beck to have to deliver strike after strike. Make this a Heisman caliber moment between these two quarterbacks. Let number two be the number one reason why you get to be considered the number one team in college football in the SEC. I like the direction of where Ole Miss is padded in their offensive line as well. Very excited to see the future of what this unit can be.
I like that. Number two on the field, number one in your hearts. Cole, thanks so much for the time, man. Appreciate you.
Anytime, guys. Thanks for having me.
The man.
Cole Thompson, make sure you check him out, SEC Unfiltered. Hey, Dustin, before we go to break here, I just added a play to the ticket. Mariners, first five money line. It's George Kirby Day up in Boston. Why not? More on Sharp Money when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hour three of Sharp Money. Here we go. Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher all week, alongside the incredible Dustin Sweetelson. And Dustin, we're getting back to the progressive guest line now because we're kicking off hour three with one of my favorite people on the planet, 10-year NFL vet. You catch him now on CBS Sports, Sirius XM, and soon ESPN calling college football games. The man does not sleep. Let's welcome in Lijae Doosable. Legs, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Hey, let's start with your former team that you currently spend or have spent the most time around since retiring, and that's the New York Jets. Obviously, always in the headlines when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback. But what are you expecting from Rodgers to start the year here? Obviously, now, right now, they're asking Robert Saleh whether or not he's going to play in the preseason. It's looking unlikely. Do you think there's going to be a long ramp-up period for him to get back to health? What do you think we're going to see early from Rodgers?
Well, the good thing about Aaron Rodgers is people tend to forget because I guess it feels like ages ago. But let's not forget, Joe, he was actually practicing with the team at the back half of the season last year. He was their scout team quarterback, and from all the reports – reports I heard and being around the team, he was actually cutting up that championship type defense in during the season, in the back half of the season. So you got to think he's well ahead of the curve when it comes to recovering from the Achilles injury. Didn't have any limitations in OTAs and hasn't had any throughout training camp. So you would assume that a healthy Aaron Rodgers would give the Jets the best chance to make a run, not only at the playoffs, but the Super Bowl as well. And the first things first, what the Jets had to do was they had to rectify the offensive line, because it's like any quarterback, right? When they're pressured heavily, they don't produce at such a high level. And history has shown Aaron Rodgers, when he's under duress, just like most quarterbacks in this league, he doesn't play to the level that we're used to him playing, the four-time MVP of the league. So they really did a really good job this offseason fortifying that offensive line. I will say, in early on in camp, there have been some talks and discussions about potential high snaps, which tends to happen, Joe, when you put the pads on, because the center mind gets sped up, right? Because now it's not just about snapping the ball back to the quarterback. It's also blocking that 300-plus-pound man in front of you, right? But I heard today's practice was a lot cleaner. I heard there was maybe one high snap, but it's still early in camp. It's not too concerning. But the one thing I haven't heard is there's been a lot of offensive line busts in regards to protection. If you've seen a lot of the highlights and clips the New York Jets, you know, team has put out there via social media, it looks like a clean pocket around Aaron Rodgers. And then so many, even the beat writers and fans that have been in the stands, looks like there's been a lot of clean pockets. So that's something that you hope bodes well going forward. You know, they took Tyron Smith, or they brought him in free agency. Also Simpson from the Baltimore Ravens at guard to really solidify that offensive line. And seems like it's panned out so far. And the rapport between Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers looks like it did last year in camp. So I'm expecting Aaron Rodgers to play on the elite level, because that's usually what he has done when he's been held upright and has had a solid offensive line in front of him.
Yeah, Lijay, can you help us understand this from a player's perspective? Because I think they're in a very unique position where they are so all in on this year. They were very aggressive in the offseason. And we know there are jobs on the line here, right? Aaron Rodgers, mm-hmm. future on the line. Joe Douglas, the GM, future on the line. Robert Saleh, head coaching career on the line. And you look in the betting market, they're 20-1. There's 11 teams shorter than them to win the Super Bowl. What does that pressure do on a team? And how hard is it to reach that when you know that's hanging over the organization?
Yeah, I mean, there's pressure every day in the NFL. Like, there's pressure to do your job. There's pressure to keep your job. I had a coach tell me once in the NFL, you compete to play, you compete to stay, right? Because the NFL stands for not for long. So the Jets players, the staff, the front office, they know the pressure. They know if they don't get it done this year, there will be wholesale changes. So, again, I don't know how much that technically affects the players, because they feel like if Aaron Rodgers stays healthy, and even if he doesn't, right, they did a really good job bringing in a veteran guy like Tyrod Taylor that could steer the ship. Say Aaron Rodgers, knock on wood, had to unfortunately miss a game or two. They feel like with Tyrod Taylor and this defense, they still have a shot at making the playoffs and making a run. So, yes, there's pressure as a player, but there's pressure every day. Like, when you go out there, like I said, a coach told me once, you compete to play, you compete to stay. Like, so, like, one thing I'll let you in on and tell you guys from a player's perspective, when they bring you in and they signed you, they're looking for somebody to replace you. So, like, there's pressure every day just to keep your job, let alone worry about, you know, the organization maybe potentially blowing things up and starting over, because you have to, first of all, do your job before you can help the team. There's a saying we have, do your 1/11th, right? Don't worry about doing somebody else's job. Just focus on your job and we'll be fine. So, yes, there's pressure, obviously, because if they don't get it done, there will be wholesale changes, but there's pressure in the NFL, period.
Yeah, I love the insight, Lijay, and a lot of obviously pressure there in New York this year, because this is an all-in season, a last chance for a lot of guys, whether it's in the coaching staff or on that roster. Let's take a look at the rest of that division, though. The Buffalo Bills, the Miami Dolphins. The more I look at the AFC East, the more I like the Jets, not even so much because it has to do with Rodgers or the offense. It has to do with two things. I think that their defense might be the best in football, let alone being far and away better than that of the Bills and the Dolphins. And I just don't see ways in which Buffalo and Miami really got better this offseason. What do you think about the Jets' competition in that division?
Yeah, it was interesting. We've seen the betting lines kind of change. If you look early on in the offseason, I believe it went Buffalo, Miami, Jets. More recently, the Jets are a lot closer to the Buffalo Bills in regards to being the favorites for the AFC East, and the Miami Dolphins have slid back into that third spot. So when you look at the division as a whole, yes, you do have to pay respect to the Buffalo Bills because they've dominated that division for the last 4 years. But to me, it's just hard when you have that much wholesale change, right, to have success. Not only did they lose their number one receiver in Stephon Diggs, there's only one receiver currently on the roster that has actually caught pass from Josh Allen, right? And that's Khalil Shakir. So you're talking about building that continuity up with a whole bunch of new receivers. Now, I do believe with Joe Brady as offensive coordinator, they'll go more 12 personnel. When I say 12 personnel, one back, two tight ends, right? They'd have two really good tight ends in Dalton Kincaid and Dawson Knox, who actually didn't play that much together last year because Dawson Knox was beat up for most of the season. So I could see them really leaning into the 12 personnel and then also getting James Cook involved. That's exactly what they did last year when Joe Brady took over the play calling duties. He put less pressure on Josh Allen because when Josh Allen sometimes, because he feels like he can throw the ball anywhere on the field, he sometimes, you know, reels and puts the ball where it shouldn't be and turns the football over. So a lot of times Joe Brady took the onus out of his hands and they got the run game going. They got Josh Allen some easy throws to James Cook just in the flat or on some option routes. That way James Cook could get a mismatch over a linebacker or a safety. I think you'll see more of that from the Buffalo Bills, but also wholesale changes on defense too. Their two-headed monster at safety is no longer there. Tre'Davious White isn't there. Matt Milano's coming off a major injury. We'll see how he bounces back. So yes, I know respect has to be paid to the Buffalo Bills because they have dominated this division the last 4 years, but when you have that much overturn, it's hard for me, and it's not me being a homer, to pick them to win the division over the New York Jets simply because without Aaron Rodgers, this team still won 7 games based off its defense last year. So you would think with Aaron Rodgers, I saw a stat today, the Jets defense held teams to 19 points or less the last 2 seasons without having adequate quarterback play. And Aaron Rodgers' quote-unquote worst season, which was 2022, the Green Bay Packers still average nearly 22 points. So you're talking about a 3-point swing regardless with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. So if Aaron Rodgers can stay healthy, and I know that's a big if, and you can say that about anybody, right? Because how many backup quarterbacks played last year? I mean, it'd be hard, especially for the value, it'd be hard not to put money on the Jets to win this division.
Lize, another team that you played for, the Niners, the favorite in the NFC, plus 250, a really short price. I want to ask you about their system and Brandon Ayuk, where we don't know how this is going to play out, whether or not he's going to get a new deal. Am I crazy in thinking that Kyle Shanahan should just never really pay too much for receivers because his system can create them? Or is Brandon Ayuk a different kind of animal when it comes to that?
I don't know if you can say that because I was with the 49ers in 2017 and we had some pretty good receivers. Pierre Garçon, we had Marquise Godwin, but none of them were doing what Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel is doing. So in regards to Kyle being a genius, of course, right? He puts the defense in such a bind with so much pre-snap motion. What he wants to do on offense, right, is just for you to take your attention off what you should be doing for half a second. That's all he needs. Have a second, because there's so many nuances in that offense. I think Brock Purdy runs it perfectly in regards of processing and getting the ball out as quick as possible, right? They always have that dagger concept where they have an in-breaking route where they send somebody vertical. The crazy thing is on defense, you know it's coming, but because of a pre-snap motion here, the quarterback shifting his hips there, you're out of position, and then Brock Purdy's throwing an absolute dart behind your head. So Kyle Shanahan is so masterful when it comes to the run game and the pass game and the nuances to that offense. I understand what you're saying about maybe you shouldn't pay a receiver, but again, I was on that team in the same offense, and the receivers were good, but they weren't producing at the same level that a Brandon Ayuk or Deebo Samuel. I always liken it to this, right? It is the players and not the plays sometimes, right? It's the Jimmy, not the Joes, right? It's the Joes, not the Jimmy. So sometimes it is based off the certain players in the NFL that can make certain plays that other guys cannot do. But I do agree with you. Kyle Shanahan is one of the sharpest minds in all of football.
Lige, I love the analysis. I love the insight. Thank you so much for the time, man. We appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me on, guys.
Always, anytime, you know there's an open invite there. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at DJ Doozable. great, great insight there from someone who was in the locker rooms, on the field for a decade. Not easy to do in this league, Dustin. A decade. I mean, what's the average career in the NFL? Under 4 years?
I thought it was three, and it might even be under three now. I mean, it's crazy. There's no guaranteed contracts. It's a grind. To go as long as he did is insane.
Not for long, like he said, right? Not an easy league to stick around. Gonna take it back to the diamond next. More plays on today's MLB card here on Sharp Money. Sharp Money moving along here on this Wednesday afternoon. Joe Cirillo in for Patrick Maher this week alongside Dustin Swedelson. And Dustin, we're getting some steam here on this Mariners first five play. A little home run from Josh Rojas. We've got a lead to work with now.
Oh, love to see it. Love to see it. It's that fifth inning, man. It's crucial. And I'm getting a little bit of help here. It looks like a ball got away from an infielder in Arizona. They're threatening. I'm on over 4.5 for the Diamondbacks. Runner on third. Corbin Carroll at the dish. We can nickel our diamond way to this ticket cashing. That's all I need.
There would be no better way to end this show than with a couple of winning tickets for you and I. In the meantime, let's get back to the Progressive guest line, though, and welcome in our buddy Chris Ruffalo from PickDogs.com, handicapper, doing a little college football, little bit of MLB action. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
We're great. We're great. It's great to have you on. You know, we're talking about our baseball bets to start, so I know that the dog days of summer have been getting to you a little bit. Let's start there, and then we can just move it on and be done with baseball. But you do have one play, and it's perfectly on a game that I don't think Dustin or I have even touched on yet. What do you have between the Angels and the Rockies tonight?
Yeah, for me, there are three things that are sure things in life: death, taxes, and the Rockies stinking it up on the road. I mean, this team has been atrocious away from Coors Field. Normally you see the drop off coming right out of a Coors Field series. The change in the altitude affects the bats a little bit, but it's carried over. I mean, this is a Rockies team that's winning what, a quarter of their games on the road this season. Kyle Freeland's been solid since returning from the injury, but he got hit for the first time last time out. Do I go out of my way to lay juice with the Angels on the road? Not really, but to be honest, it's a fade of the Rockies more than anything else. The Rockies' bullpen's been one of the worst in baseball this season. The Angels have the better bullpen since the All-Star break. For me, it's like I said, it's a play on fading the Rockies more than anything else. I'm taking the Angels here.
Chris, what's crazy is with the Rockies' pitchers, just looking into the splits, a lot of them have better numbers at home than on the road, which leads me to think that there's a different approach because of the altitude, because of the home runs, that's just not translating to normal games on the road. Because Freeland, 9.96 ERA versus 1.88 on the road, that is freaking crazy. And this, to me, is just a classic bet from you. Two teams nobody wants to watch, so you're going to bet on the Angels here with Davis Daniel on the bump, a guy I've never even heard of. That feels like a classic rough roof dog type of play here.
Well, first of all, I always bet on guys with two first names for whatever. You don't give me none of that stuff. I always bet on those guys. But Kyle Freeland is a Colorado kid, so yeah. I can see where he would be a little bit comfortable, you know, pitching in that altitude. But there's been guys like Cal Quantrill. Quantrill, for whatever reason, pitches well at Coors, you know. But you know, guys like Austin Gomber can't pitch well anywhere. So yeah. I mean, you get the good and you get the bad from the Rockies for sure.
Yeah, Austin Gomber and Ty Black, I don't think it matters what stadium they're in. Those guys are going to give it up. Chris, let's shift gears a bit. You know, at VSiN, we do drop our college football betting guide tomorrow. Let's talk a little college football. Man, you've got a juicy play you like in the SEC on a futures ticket, huh?
Absolutely, I do. You know, the Missouri Tigers are a team that I love in 2024. They're kind of like that influencer you see on social media that gets their 15 minutes of fame. They're loved at first, and then once everybody sort of kind of gets sick of them, They start to sell on him. I'm not selling on this Tigers team in 2024. Brady Cook's back. He's got Luther Burden back as well as one of the best receivers in the country. You lose Cody Schrader to the NFL, but what do you do to fill that void? You raid the Sun Belt and you get two of the best running backs in that conference in Marcus Carroll and Nate Noel, who combined for almost 2,200 rushing yards last year. The big problem for Missouri, though, and this is a saying problem in air quotes because this team still won 9 wins, was giving up the big play. But Corey Batoon coming over from South Alabama, that's a South Alabama defense that was top 15 against the pass last year. Big for a Missouri defense that was 108th in 20-plus yard pass plays allowed last season. going to put in a cover three defense that you don't really see in the SEC. When you look at that schedule, the SEC is in flux, and Missouri dodges a lot of the big dogs, you know? So the toughest tests they're going to have are at Texas A&M and at Alabama. But I think that there's still a ton of value for SEC to make the title game at plus 600 and to win the SEC title at plus 1800.
Yeah, Chris, I am on the same page. I am all about Mizzou this year. I actually agree with you. I think they got better at running back, which is a crazy thing to say because Schrader was awesome. How about this? You can co-sign or tell me I'm insane. I respect your opinion here. But Brady Cook for Heisman at 40-1, and I'll even throw this one out there, Luther Burden III at 80-1. For Heisman Trophy, it's going to take a lot, and a lot of things have to fall right, but it feels like that continuity and what they lost on defense, potential shootouts down the line, I feel like those guys are kind of good long shots to target.
And I think it's a play that kind of goes hand in hand, where if you like Missouri to win the SEC, a lot of it's probably going to come on the back of Brady Cook and probably Luther Burden. So I'm definitely not opposed to the Brady Cook look. The Luther Burden one might be a bit worth just a sprinkle to have something on it, but definitely love the Brady Cook look for the Heisman at plus at 40-1.
Chris Ruffalo joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Roof. That's R-U-F-F, the pick dog. Chris, let's move it over to the Big 12. Quickly, because this is a really new look conference. I mean, you look at the SEC, and yeah, they add Texas, they add Oklahoma. The Big 12 is like they did a complete merger with, you know, the scraps of the Pac-12, if you will. How do you think Colorado, former Big 12 team, off to the Pac-12, back in the Big 12, how are they going to fare in year one, take two in the Big 12?
Yeah, year one, take two. You know, for me, maybe it's a hot take. I think there's a lot of public fanfare and hype again around Colorado. And I think it's, once again, going to be more of a detriment than it's going to be a help. You know, Deion Sanders is the hype machine. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. And a lot of players want to play for Coach Prime. But just like that case of Prime that I had in my fridge, it didn't last long, and it got crushed way too quickly for my liking, especially that blue raspberry flavor. I love that stuff. But Shedeur Sanders, he's going to get the love and good reason. He's talented, dual threat, can move the ball with his, you know, through the air and when he has to scramble. The problem is that those big games came because the Buffaloes flat out sucked running the football last year. They were dead last in the country, 2.3 yards per carry. And when you can't run the football in 2nd and 13 or 3rd and 11, you're averaging 2.3 yards per carry. I might as well play poker with you and deal my cards face up and tell you what I'm going to do. You know, were there a lot of injuries for the Buffaloes? Yeah. But the Big 12 is just as tough as it was last year with the additions of Arizona and Utah. The top teams in the Big 12 are still as good. And Colorado's defense last year wasn't able to cut it. They were having teams pass all over them. I don't see any improvements to say that we're going to see anything different. And another thing, my future is for Colorado to finish under 5.5 wins, but start at week one. Your Coach Prime, you say you need a win against North Dakota State, an FCS team that's got like a 47-5 playoff record. I'm taking North Dakota State on the money line. I think Coach Prime just shot himself in the foot. Yeah, absolutely.
I like it, man.
Oh, I love the conviction already. Yeah, let's do it. Let's ride. So, okay, the Big 12, wide open. I mean, I think we all look at this and Texas and Oklahoma are gone. There's some chaos potentially there, Chris. Would you like a Utah to win it? K-State, OK State, UCF, Kansas? Who are you looking at to win the Big 12 this year? Do you like anyone?
Just looking at the odds that you guys have on the screen here, I would say I like Utah because of the advantage that they have at Rice-Eccles. But I think that a look that not many people are giving credit to, UCF at plus 950. I like this UCF team. I like the addition of KJ Jefferson. Kind of gives the Gus Malzahn, Cam Newton vibes from Auburn. KJ Jefferson, a great quarterback that can move the ball with his feet when the bounce house is rocking. It's one of the tougher road environments in college football. They have a ton of night games. I think the schedule plays out favorably for them. So I like if UCF can dodge some bolts and get some bounces to go their way, I think UCF is a great value at plus 950.
Chris, by the way, when it comes to Colorado, man, I'm in agreement with you. I think there is more of a feasible path to Colorado being a 4-8 team than a 6-6 team this year. When you look at their schedule, not an easy schedule. And especially that non-conference, you know, North Dakota State, I'm with you. I think they are very live for an upset on the money line there. And then at Nebraska, at Colorado State, those two games on the road, you can't look past either of those teams. But a team that I am high on coming over from the Pac-12 to the Big 12, Arizona, and their win total sits at 7.5 on some shops, 8 on others. They're retaining that incredible QB receiver duo of Fifita and McMillan. what do you think the Wildcats can accomplish this year? What's their ceiling for you?
Well, for as far as Colorado goes, it's hashtag we come into a 5-7 record. Arizona, on the other hand, I'm with you. I like the combination of Fifita and McMillan. I'm concerned about, you know, having no Jed Fish there, but I still think there's going to be enough here. We've known the Big 12 to be, you know, a conference that sometimes prides itself on having a ton of offensive shootouts. And Arizona showed last year that they can be a team that can go toe-to-toe with some of the big boys, and especially not having to deal with Oklahoma, not having to deal with Texas. I think that this the Big 12 is as wide open as it's been in some time. So I could definitely get on board with the value with Arizona as well.
Great stuff, brother. Thanks for doing this. We'll chat throughout the season.
Absolutely. Can't wait. Look forward to talking to you guys again.
Give him a follow on Twitter at Roof. That's R-U-F-F, the pick dog. Chris, thanks again for the time. Dustin, as we sweat it out here, final 15 seconds or so of the block. Seattle, one out away. 0-2 count to Devers. Can we get it?
D-backs got there for me. I'll give you play-by-play if we can sneak it in here. Pitch clock is at 7 seconds. 1-2
count. Oh, come
on,
baby.
Herbie's
give me
waiting.
Something. You're ahead of me.
He's waiting.
You're ahead of me. Give me something.
And foul ball. Nope.
And we'll find
it. It's an out. We're good.
Let's go. We cash a ticket on Sharp Money. Back after this.